The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Here at the Black Information Network, we know how important it is for you to start your week off energized, engaged, and enlightened. There are always major stories that break over the weekend, and we feel you should know about the ones we are talking about today. So stay tuned for our weekend recap. This is the Black Information Network Daily Podcast, and I am your host, Ramses Ja. All right, first things first, normally we have a correspondent to help us out with this, but we have so much news to cover that we need to get it to you in a timely fashion, and it will just be a little bit more streamlined if I just deliver this to you. So let's get you up to speed. First up, from the Daily News, Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene Friday called the earthquake that rattled the New York metro area a divine punishment for America and a strong sign to repent. The Christian conservative lawmaker from rural Georgia suggested the tremor, as well as the total eclipse of the sun that will be seen in parts of the U.S. today, are both signs that God is not happy with us. She says, quote, God is sending America strong signs to tell us to repent, earthquakes and eclipses, and many more things to come, she tweeted. She goes on to say, I pray that our country listens. So, I think what she's doing here is making a strong case for education. Indeed, the founding fathers didn't want us, you know, making the most out of natural phenomenon and sacrificing virgins and doing all kinds of stuff like that. They wanted us to live in a society where we were forward thinking, where we were at least more progressive than this. And then, you know, we end up with a country that is also populated with people seeking religious freedom. So the God Squad. And so we have both of these facets, you know, going back and forth in this country. It's a tale as old as time. And, you know, the truth of the matter is that there are scientific explanations for eclipses. They happen relative to the scale of time on which the earth operates. They happen quite frequently. Earthquakes are no different. And this, to me, shows that there are people that will blame anything other than the truth for what's going on in front of their faces. They will blame DEI. They will blame Black people. They will blame immigration. They will blame whatever it is that they can for the problems in the world, anything other than the truth. And the truth of the matter is that Earthquakes happen naturally, and so do eclipses. Every eclipse that I've ever been present for, even from the first one when I was in the fourth grade, there was no one making a case that God was punishing us. And indeed, the eclipse was not a punishment. And unfortunately, this is one of the people that has been elected to represent her, at least the population in rural Georgia, and their beliefs. And she is one of the folks that shapes this country. And fortunately, our founding fathers, I don't like calling them that, but that's what they are. So our founding fathers wanted this to be a country where people's voices could shape outcomes by the people, for the people. And so there are people like her. And if you feel the way that she feels and that God is punishing us via an eclipse or an earthquake, then your beliefs are represented there. And if you are like me and feel like this is nonsense, then please continue to vote. Moving on, our next story comes from Reason.com. In August of 2022, Bruce Frankel's fiance called 911 after Frankel began having a grand mal seizure. But instead of receiving medical help, a police officer burst into Frankel's home and tased him. Making matters worse, police engaged in an attempt to cover up their mistake by launching bogus charges against Frankel. Now, this is a long one, but I feel it's important to read it. Also, bear with me. Frankel has now launched a lawsuit against the officers who tased him, arguing that their actions clearly violated his Fourth Amendment rights. The ordeal began in the early morning hours of August 29, 2022, when 61-year-old Frankel began having a grand mal seizure in his home in San Anselmo, California. His fiance, named in the complaint, is Alice. She awoke to Frankel's gasping and called 911, telling the operator that Frankel was having trouble breathing. As she waited for medical help to arrive, still on the phone with 911, Frankel's seizure stopped, but he remained disoriented. The complaint notes that he was now entering the postural stage of the seizure, when the brain is recovering, but the victim remains unaware of his surroundings and unable to understand directions. Shortly after, Officer Kevin Sinnott of the Central Marin Police Authority arrived, and he rushed into Allison Frankel's bedroom, attempting to restrain Frankel. Sinnott wrestled Frankel onto the bed and attempted to handcuff him, the suit reads. Just 25 seconds after his arrival, Sinnott's voice became angry, and he shouted to Frankel, "Stop, stop fighting with me." Alice responded loudly and emphatically, "He's unconscious." Sinnott argued with her, "He's not unconscious, he's fighting." Alice later warned, "You're going to break his neck." Sinnott then tased Frankel, causing him to hit his head on the bedroom furniture. Soon after, two more police officers and three EMTs arrived. Frankel was handcuffed and taken to a local hospital, still delirious. The lawsuit alleges that the officers attempted to cover up their use of force by pinning false charges on Frankel. According to the complaint, one questioning officer, quote, blatantly lied to Frankel in a final attempt to trick him into making an incriminating statement, telling him that when the officer got there, you started attacking him. The suit also claims that Sinnott falsely told one of Frankel's doctors that he was squaring up to fight him when he arrived, slowing down Frankel's eventual seizure diagnosis. Frankel was eventually booked into the Marin County Jail on charges of resisting arrest and battery. Afterward, he was released, quote, still wearing nothing but his underwear and a disposable hospital outfit. He had no wallet, phone, or money. He did not remember Alice's phone number in the jail, and they would not help him contact her. So he walked in his hospital slippers about half a mile to a gas station where workers helped him call a taxi. While Marin County District Attorney's Office eventually refused to formally file charges against Frankel, he has still suffered lasting harm from his treatment by police. In addition to the physical injuries he sustained from Sinnott's use of force, Frankel spent over $10,000 fighting the police's attempts to have him prosecuted. Officers, quote, submitted the false reports or caused them to be submitted in an effort to smear Frankel's reputation, preoccupy him with a criminal case, intimidate him, and prevent him from pursuing claims against them for improper and excessive use of force. The statement also adds that police, quote, acted willfully with the wrongful intention of injuring Frankel and for an improper and evil motive amounting to malice. All right. I know that was a lot. Certainly a lot for me to read too, but I've been making a case on this show for some time and really anytime I have a microphone in an audience, that police are not heroes. They are certainly not the heroes that we paint with broad strokes. There are some rare instances of police officers acting heroically, but mostly police are just doing the job of responding to crime. They do not prevent crime. They respond to it. And often police overreach. This is one such example. Often police terrorize and brutalize Black and brown people. This is one such example. And the case that I've been making is that we need to seriously rethink police and their role in our lives by painting them with broad strokes, by suggesting to ourselves that the police are the heroes. I think that what we do is we position them to take advantage of us. We ignore their humanity. We ignore their flaws. And it allows us to excuse corruption, cover-ups, brutality, etc. And I happen to know that the Defund the Police movement was not supported by white people, but it was also not supported by Black people. Now, there were some Black people, but the majority of Black people did not wish to defund the police. And so I'm talking to us today. Defunding the police doesn't mean no more police. It means reallocating police resources. If a person is having a mental health crisis, if a person is having an overdose, if a person is having an argument, if a person is having a seizure, like the story we're talking about today, there is only one number that those people can call. And it's the same number that gets people with guns who respond to crime to show up. And people with guns who respond to crime know how to respond to crime. They have no idea how to respond to a seizure. And because we give them absolute power, they can abuse it and then try to cover it up. You have to remember, the only reason we know about this story is because they got caught. These things happen all the time to us, and they never get reported. They never see the light of day. We need additional resources beyond the police. And the question that comes up is, how are we going to pay for it? Well, we can take the budget that we give to police that is overinflated, that puts more actual guns, devices whose purpose is to end lives, onto the streets, in the hands of people with the capacity to cover up the injustice that they inflict on our community. That's where the money comes from. And all of that thinking put together is called defunding the police. I don't love the messaging or the marketing, but the idea feels sound. And what we need to do is implement it fully and stand by it long enough for it to have a meaningful change in outcomes. We can't get scared after 6 months. We can't get scared after a year. We've been doing this since the beginning of police, and we know it doesn't work. So we need to give a new idea its time in the sun as well. And there are some cities that show a lot of promise and some cities that need to continue to engineer solutions that will work for them that have tried this defunding approach. But I say we should not give up on it. All right, next up, this comes from the Black Information Network. A former Black general sales manager for an automotive dealership in Missouri claims that a white coworker wore a gorilla suit to mock him in a lawsuit. According to the Atlanta Black Star, Darwin Cunningham and Justice Norville, two Black men who formerly served as general sales managers at Ed Napleton Automotive Group, filed a lawsuit against the company last December alleging racial discrimination. Cunningham and Norville allege they maintained, quote, exceptional performance, quote, at the dealership, but were treated, quote, differently and less well, quote, than their white counterparts. In one instance, a white salesperson wore a gorilla suit to work and mocked Norvell in 2021, according to the lawsuit. Norvell reported the incident to his superiors, but the company declined to take corrective action. The suit states, Cunningham and Norvell also claim they were paid less of the monthly gross sales and finance than their white colleagues. According to the suit, the pair's work environment grew more hostile in July of 2022 when Napleton Automotive Group named Todd Flowers and Don Venata, both of whom are white, as regional managers. The newly appointed regional managers, quote, began a targeted campaign to create what they described as a culture change at Napleton Mid Rivers Kia, unquote, the lawsuit says. Venata was allegedly overheard saying, quote, we want to keep North County, and St. Peter's, St. Peter's, referring to keeping the predominantly black population of North County separate from the mostly white St. Peter's. According to the lawsuit, the two regional managers only hired and promoted white salespeople at the dealership. Venata and Flowers also allegedly enforced a new dress code that targeted black employees, including prohibiting athletic shoes, despite never being disciplined, counseled, or warned about deficiencies in performance. Cunningham and Norvell were fired on October 24th, 2022. Yeah, there's a lot here. I suspect that this comes on the heels of Trumpism. That's not to say that it didn't happen before Trump, but Trump certainly emboldened a group of people in this country. And Elon Musk has emboldened a group of people in this country as the epitome of strong white masculinity. Have a ton of kids, get a lot of money, call it like it is. This is our country. And whether or not these sales managers sincerely feel that way, figures like Trump, figures like Musk have certainly insulated this type of behavior. Attacks on DEI, attacks on affirmative action have certainly allowed people who would otherwise question what is right, what is moral, what is just. Now they have a free pass to, you know, bulldoze over these two black general sales managers, Darwin Cunningham and Justice Norvell. And so there's a lot here, and I believe it's connected to a lot of higher level goings on. But I wish these brothers the best in their lawsuit.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how, I don't know where, I don't know what. God, if you show me, God, if you tell me, God, no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us. Oh, yeah.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right. Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And hopefully everybody learns a little something. This is your Weekend Recap with me, your host, Ramses Ja, discussing the weekend's major stories. All right, we're about halfway through. Next up from twourbangirls.com, a Latina from Lawndale is suing an organization that bills itself as fighting for cannabis justice with a legal goal to heal the legacy of racism in America, alleging she was told she was not chosen for a position with the nonprofit in 2023 because she is not Black. Griselda Lupercio Chavez's Los Angeles Superior Court lawsuit against the Hood Incubator alleges racial discrimination, retaliation, and wrongful failure to hire in violation of public policy. She seeks unspecified compensatory and punitive damages. Chavez interviewed for a position with the Hood Incubator via Zoom last July with two organization representatives, one of whom is a managing agent, the suit states. The two representatives remained on the Zoom call after the interview and spent 10 minutes talking about why they were not interested in hiring Chavez because she is not Black, the suit states. Both representatives mocked Chavez's race and for saying she had biracial children, telling the plaintiff they found her comments off-putting and falsely implying that she only claims to care about Black people because she has Black kids and friends, according to the suit. One of the representatives told Chavez that because she is a Latina, she is used to the Latino community, quote, pulling strings for each other, the suit states. Chavez was, quote, embarrassed, ashamed, and emotionally broken, and in financial desperation, unquote, after learning that she was not hired, allegedly due to her race, national origin, and or color, the suit states. So this one is unfair. Griselda Chavez, it's unfair to her. There's no two ways about it. What I will say is that I know that there are a lot of people who feel like it's time for Black people to put Black people first and to put Black people above all else. And that's not a sentiment that I disagree with. I do know, however, that we have a long way to go. And I think the conventional wisdom is that if you want to go somewhere fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And my position has always been that we're going to go further together. There have been instances of racism from the Latino community toward Black people. I want to say that some of these instances come from California. So these individuals who continued the Zoom call after Chavez was supposed to have disconnected may be familiar with those stories. That's where I think this statement of, you know, Latinos pulling the strings behind the scenes comes from. But I would argue that there are many, many, many more instances of Latinos standing up for Black people. And I think that it is right for us to stand up for them. We go further together. As far as someone having Black children, having Black friends, I get that that is a thin excuse, but it's only a thin excuse when it is a thin excuse. When it is not a thin excuse, when it is authentically who a person is, I love Black people so much that I made more of them. That's something that one of my business partners has said to me before. He is a white man who married a Black woman and has Black children. And where he can teach them, he does. And where he can't, he seeks advice and he leans on his wife's experience and understanding. He loves Black music. He loves Black culture. If you never saw his skin and you only heard him talk, you would not know the difference. And that's not to say that he's trying to sound Black. He's trying to sound like himself. But he has no other way to be. And there are times in his life when he is villainized for that. And I say that's wrong. Race is one thing. Culture is a whole other thing. And so when a person says, listen, I love Black, I support Black, I spend Black, and if there is more that I need to do, please tell me. And that person is not Black, I'll tell you what, I can point to a ton of Black people who don't carry that much weight. And so, again, where it's an excuse, and it's an excuse, where it's, hey, man, I got a Black friend. Okay, man, you're just talking. When people sincerely mean it, I feel like we should be very careful in crucifying our would-be allies, and indeed our years-long allies. And this may be unpopular, but I've said it before on the show, I'll say it again. I really didn't see what the big deal about Rachel Dolezal was. Really didn't see it. Okay? Her pretending to be Black, yeah, I get that. That's a little weird, sure. But if she's doing the work, yo, we need some soldiers out here. You've heard the story so far. We got a ways to go. Moving on. This comes from the New York Post. A fire erupted outside of Senator Bernie Sanders' Burlington, Vermont office on Friday, and police suspect an arsonist may be to blame. No injuries were reported, but members of the independent senator's staff were inside the building when the blaze started. Quote, a significant fire engulfed the door and part of the vestibule, impeding the egress of staff members who were working in the office and endangering their lives, unquote, the Burlington Police Department said in a statement. They go on to say the sprinkler system then engaged and largely extinguished the fire. Authorities believe a male suspect doused the door with an accelerant before setting it ablaze and fleeing the scene. The suspect remains at large and police are unsure of his motive. So one of the things I will say is that there have been quite a few attempts on the liberals in this country. There have been quite a few attempts on people who espouse a progressive agenda, an equitable agenda, a society where the people get along better, people have more access to more resources, people are unencumbered by more of the challenges that we face today. And the more conservative facet of the country, playing into the fears of their voter base, fear-mongering indeed, has stoked the flames of hatred. So much so that these attacks are becoming more prevalent. I cannot for the life of me understand why a person would want to harm Bernie Sanders. Makes no sense to me. He means no one any harm. He has a decidedly socialist agenda, which isn't the worst thing in the world. If there were enough votes, we would end up with a socialist country. Okay? He likes the idea of that. He feels like there's ways that we can implement some really robust socialist programs into our capitalistic society. And I don't disagree with all of them. Some of them sound well-founded. We've seen success in other places that are capitalistic societies with robust socialist programs. Finland, Sweden, Switzerland, these places where there's not everybody in jail. and people have more access to more resources, and billionaires pay their fair share. And poor people in the middle class aren't stomped on. And what the right has managed to do is cultivate a hatred of people that want to live in a society that is more equitable. That's the only way you get fires at political offices. So, you know, we have to vote. That's really it. That's the only way we engage in a democracy. I know that you're tired of hearing it. I'm tired of saying it, but when we all do vote, we don't have to keep talking about it. So we can shape the world in such a way that provides a more equitable experience for all of us. Finally, this from ABC News. Jonathan Majors, whose promising acting career stalled after a domestic violence conviction in New York, was sentenced Monday to domestic violence programming after the judge decided, quote, jail is not necessary, unquote. Majors must complete a 52-week in-person batterers intervention program in Los Angeles, continue mental health counseling, and stay away from the victim. His ex-girlfriend, Grace Jabari, said Manhattan criminal court judge Michael Gaffey. Majors faced a maximum sentence of 364 days in jail, but the Manhattan District Attorney's Office did not seek jail time. Instead, prosecutor Kelly Galloway said domestic violence programming along with an order of protection against Jabari would suffice. So, you know, I famously wished to reserve a strong opinion until after he was convicted, and he has been convicted. Now that he is convicted, and it is on record as him being guilty for assaulting his ex-girlfriend. I will say I don't love that, but those are the rules in this society. I do recognize and respect that Black men are often treated unfairly by the criminal justice system. But I also recognize and respect that, you know, this woman, Grace Jabari, her experience is very much her experience. I can only base what I saw on the video. And again, to me, it looked like he was trying to get away from her. I don't, of course, know what happened inside of the truck based on their testimony. It just kind of seems like they were wrestling over a phone. And it wasn't something that it didn't come from nowhere. I want us to keep that in mind. You know, there are people who can be wrong and you can be wrong because it's just wrong, and you can be like extremely wrong. And, you know, him responding to her the way that he did, we now know that that's wrong. If someone snatched my phone out of my hand and that person happened to be female, I now know that there's nothing I can do about that physically to get my phone back. She just is able to steal my phone. But I, now that I understand the story, I recognize that it was not unprovoked. It was based on something, and his response was wrong, you know, and Grace Jabari now has the narrative. But I think that the judge, you know, who handed down the sentence kind of understands the nuance of this the way I'm trying to. I can't say that what I have is right or wrong. But it just doesn't seem like the sort of thing that would require jail time. It doesn't really, to me, seem like the sort of thing that requires a conviction even, but this is kind of splitting the difference, I suppose. You know, he's not in jail and she got a conviction. And so everybody walks away, not better, but you know, this is the resolution. So we'll leave it there. Don't forget, these and more stories can be found at BINnews.com. Thank you very much for your time. And be sure to check back in with us for the midweek memo. It'll be me again. Hopefully it'll be less stories. We can get through it just as quickly. This has been a production of the Black Information Network. Today's show was produced by Chris Thompson. Have some thoughts you'd like to share? Use the red microphone talkback feature on the iHeartRadio app. While you're there, be sure to hit subscribe and download all of our episodes. I'm your host, Ramses Jha, on all social media. And join us tomorrow as we share our news with our voice from our perspective, right here on the Black Information Network Daily Podcast.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right. That's right.